Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. The season preview podcasts are done now, so this is clearly not what one of these podcasts is, but what we're going to be talking about in this podcast is the much anticipated, highly promoted, great head-to-head league punting debate between myself and the one and only Matt Smith. Matt, how are you going?
I am very well, Josh. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to have you on for this podcast. The season previews are done. The season is about less than 3 weeks away. Drafts are definitely starting to, they're not starting to appear. A lot of people's drafts have occurred. There's a lot of drafts coming up in the next couple of weeks. We're ramping up into basketball season. Preseason basketball has started. NBA League Pass has finally decided that Australia is not in a blackout zone, so I am able to watch the games now, which I wasn't able to for the first 4 or 5 days due to my apparent blackout location restrictions. So that's all great to hear. Matt, punting debate. We're going to talk head-to-head leagues. We're going to talk about the strategy of punting categories. But before we do that, we've got a couple of things we want to touch on. All-Star 5 is an initiative you and me are both involved in. It's you and me, Mark Roberts, Seth Klein, and Joey Mamone. Five of us. It's a website which you can check out, and I encourage you to check out, allstar5.com. Basically, in-depth advice on your fantasy leagues, trades, drafts, whatever it is. Go ahead and check out the membership options in terms of being able to access us five guys in terms of assisting you with setting up your teams. It's pretty exciting that the beta test all went well for it. Matt, you excited for All-Star 5 to get rolling, which it should do very, very soon, in the next hour or so?
Yeah, I think it's gone live, so you can now log in there, choose your option, and the range and depth of questions which we've had have just been incredible. So if you want to get a quick and easy answer from Josh and I on Twitter, you can still do that. We'll give you, player A or player B, but if you want to give us your roster, your league settings, whatever it might be, you can type it all out. More than one of us will respond to your question and not only give you some really good advice, but hopefully give or impart some of our knowledge and experience and make you a better fantasy basketball owner along the way as well.
Yeah, well, that's what the hope is, and I think, it's worked really well so far, so I do encourage you to check that out. It's not like it's an expensive membership to invest in, so have a look at that. The other things that I do recommend that if you're going to invest heavily into fantasy basketball, obviously Basketball Monster is a great website to check out. The draft tracker is an invaluable tool for your drafts coming up. I do encourage you to check that out, and it's not just useful for your drafts. All through the season, there's going to be stacks of content provided by me on there. Heaps of advice, heaps of tools, and I do encourage you to check out Basketball Monster. And for everyone who's in the Red Rock Listener Leagues, ESPN has finally allowed the inputting of the offline draft results. So all of those drafts have now been inputted, with the exception of the Mike Uzzolino league, which will be done straight after this podcast. So by the time you listen to this podcast, if you're not watching live, I encourage you to do that. All of those leagues will be inputted. Free agency acquisitions can be started to be made, and trades can be started to make. So all of that stuff is ready to go. But Matt, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're not here to advertise for all these things. We're here to talk about head-to-head leagues. We're here to talk about punting, which is a strategy. If I won't define it, because I think that'll form part of our arguments. Perhaps you are on the side of no punt. Your team no punt. I'm team punt. Now, I'll start off by explaining what the term punting means in head-to-head leagues. So head-to-head, we're not talking points leagues, because there's no punting strategy in head-to-head points leagues. And to be honest, the strategy level in head-to-head points leagues is a lot lower. It's find the most points. There's a little bit of, finding the right guy at the right spot in drafts, but in essence, it's find the most points. In a rotisserie league, we're not talking rotisserie leagues, because neither of us recommend punting in a rotisserie format. But in a head-to-head league, the idea of punting a category is devaluing that category, and it's not taking it into consideration. It's not deliberately trying to be bad in that category. It is just completely disregarding that category. Now, Matt, you are against that. Give us some arguments for it. Give us some arguments against it.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to put that definition into a practical sense. Now, you and I debated on Twitter very briefly about a month or so ago around Kemba Walker and Jeff Teague. Now, using Basketball Monsters projections, which you've had a hand in, I'm assuming.
Yep.
If we look at those two players' projections for this coming season and we go back, even if you want to go back to last season stats, they're very similar. Based on Basketball Monsters projections, there's a point, 0.7 of a point difference, 0.3 of a three difference in terms of threes per game, 0.2 of a steal, one rebound in terms of which favors Kemba Walker, 1.3 assists, which favors Jeff Teague. And Teague's also got a slight free throw percentage advantage there, just by the 1%. So if we look at eight cut leagues, because I know you hate turnovers, Josh.
Well, you know,
Jeff Teague is ranked.
I'll speak on that quickly. I don't like turnovers, but I'm okay with having nine cut leagues. I just literally do not pay any attention to turnovers if I'm in a nine cut head to head league. In a roto league, it's a different story, and I'm not a fan of negative categories, but I'm okay with them in a head to head league because whatever, it can be there, you can win it, sometimes you can't, but it's not something that I enjoy as a category. But go ahead.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, so in eight cut leagues, Jeff Teague has a ranking of 27 and Kemba Walker has a ranking of 62. Then if we go and turn on your punt field goal percentage strategy, so we want to punt that category, Kemba Walker becomes the 29th best player and Jeff Teague becomes the 30th best player. So what that's telling everyone is to go and draft Kemba Walker before Jeff Teague. Now, if we look at projections once again, Kemba Walker has a field goal percentage of 38.6 and Jeff Teague has a field goal percentage of 46.1, a difference of nearly 8%. So by having Walker ranked over Teague, that ranking is telling people to not only forget about your field goal percentage, but in this case, deliberately worsen it when there's no need. There's no plausible reason to ruin your field goal percentage by at least 5%. And in this case, the projections are saying 8% that early in the draft, or any point in the draft, but especially that early in the draft. So when two players have statistics which are close across a number of categories, which I just read out, I'm never going to recommend drafting the player who is significantly worse in a particular category.
I understand all of that, Matt, but what it isn't saying isn't saying draft Kemba Walker ahead of Jeff Teague. You can get Kemba Walker 20 spots below Jeff Teague, but if you're forgetting about field goal percentage, they return a similar value. So you could in essence get both guys, and look, Kemba's going at pick 65, Jeff Teague's going at pick 42. So never in that situation would I recommend taking Kemba at pick 29 if his ADP is 65. You can get him at pick 50, at pick 55, or anywhere around that sort of range, and you can deliver yourself, you know, top 30, top 35 type value if you are disregarding his field goal percentage. And you don't draft Kemba Walker to deliberately get bad at field goal percentage. You draft him because you aren't caring about field goal percentage. And a lot of your strategy might be determined about who you pick in the first round.
And you say you shouldn't care about the category or don't care about the category. Of course you should care about the category. Why, when you're against a team who's shooting 52% from the field,
yep,
it doesn't matter if your team is 43 or 41%. But if you're against another team who is punting field goal percentage or is just average in field goal percentage or poor in field goal percentage, and they shoot 42% for the week, and you shoot 41%, you've just lost the category. Why wouldn't you look after every single category along the way? You're just throwing away stats and throwing away categories for no particular reason.
But you are throwing away stats and you are throwing away a category, but there is a reason behind it, because in order to disregard a category, you then are able to focus your resources and concentrate your resources into the other categories and make them stronger, insulate yourself against someone having a hot week in one category. In terms of, we look at Z scores or standard scores, if you go balanced, you might get a 1 or a 1.5, you know, average standard score. But if you go punt, you might have one that's a negative 4, but you also have two others that are 3.5 or 4, which makes them almost impossible to be beaten in those categories. So it gives you more strength in other categories. And when head-to-head leagues, if you can win, 55 to 57% of your matchups, which is basically between a 5-4 or a 6-3 win every week, you get into the playoffs in 95% of leagues. And then all you have to do to win in the playoffs is win five categories. You only need to be strong in five categories. And not only strong, if you're very, very strong in those categories, it's going to be really hard to top you. And that's the idea behind it. It's not throwing away stats for no reason. It's to strengthen other areas by focusing your team in other areas rather than being slightly above average or slightly below average in every category, you'll probably be bad in some, but you'll probably also be great in others, like a lot better than those teams who are average in those categories.
Well, that's another myth to punting. Just because you punt in categories, it doesn't mean you're automatically going to win those categories. And it also, just because you don't punt, it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that your team is going to be mediocre or average across the board. That's a common response around punting. And that's just a myth. And I want to give you two examples from leagues that you and I were in last season. They're different leagues. So in our 12 team Roto Riders league, which we were in, which is Zach Lewis from the Fantasy Fix one, he finished top three in 7 out of the 8 categories and 6 in the other category. Now, there was no punting going on there in a Roto league. He did it by drafting value. Now, it helps when he had the MVP Steph Curry, but he drafted Kawhi Leonard at 46, who finished a top 15 player. He drafted Nerlens Noel at 51, who he had the carry for the first 3 months of the season before he was a top 15 player over the final 2 months. He got Tim Duncan at 70, he was a top 50 player. Darren Collison at 75, who was a borderline top 50 player before he got injured. Then he picked up Nikola Mirotic at the right time and these other hot free agents. So he just drafted pure value, picking up the hot free agents at the right time and making smart moves. The other example was in our listener league, which I won. I used my point guard power forward build, the same as I do in Roto leagues. I finished first, second, third, fourth, and fifth and sixth in 6 out of the 8 categories. In the other two categories, I finished 8th and 12th. And you might say, oh, well, you must have punted free throw percentage then because you finished 12th in that category. But my first pick was Russell Westbrook, so there was no reason to punt free throw percentage. And I know you've done punting articles for Basketball Monster, and a common one is around Russell Westbrook and punting field goal because you go and draft him in the top 5 or 6. But I was able to finish 4th in field goal percentage by drafting big men who shoot over 50% from the field. Russell Westbrook shot 42.6% from the field. I was able to get my field goal percentage up to 46.5 by the end of the season just by looking after it. And based on last season's numbers, if you drafted Westbrook and then you go and get Al Horford, you could have got your field goal percent back to 46.7, which is right back in the ballpark. We talk around percentages. I rounded up to 50 and 80, but I think we've both agreed that if you're sort of 47 to 48% from the field and 77 to 78% from the free throw line, you're right in that ballpark where you're going to be super competitive in head-to-head leagues and right at the top of your standings in Roto leagues. So just, I don't want to sound like I'm the best because this is what I did, but I just wanted to give you two recent examples.
You are the best, mate.
Completely different settings and leagues and formats. And if you just look after these categories, you can be not necessarily the best in every category, but I'd rather be third, third, and sixth, and first, and last in 3 different categories.
You see, I'd rather go first, last, second, something like that. That's the way. Say we did our Superstars of Fantasy draft this last weekend, yeah, and based on the Basketball Monster projections, my team comes out with the best winning record, and my blocks are atrocious. I've got less than 0.4 blocks. And I clearly punted blocks with that team.
But imagine how good your team would be if you did have some blocks.
But if I did, I also wouldn't have as many points as I've got. I wouldn't have a free throw percentage of 81%. I probably wouldn't have my assists at 3.4. I may not have my threes at over one a game. Yeah, there's trade offs. You could say, yeah, it's great if I didn't pump blocks and got them at 0.8, but something has to sacrifice somewhere else. No one's going to catch me in scoring, assuming everything goes to plan. I'm not going to be caught in scoring. I'm not going to be caught in free throw percentage. No one's going to beat me in those categories.
What if Melo gives up halfway through the year again?
If Melo gives up, Melo gives up. But if you're in a balanced team and Melo gives up, you've lost 27 points there anyway. So what's the difference?
Well, you still can come back from that. You've got numerous categories to work with. In a punt block strategy, if I go back to Basketball Monster and I'm punting blocks, it's telling me to draft Nikola Vucevic over Pau Gasol. Why not just draft Pau Gasol, who does exactly the same things and gets you a few blocks along the way? Those extra 5 or 10 blocks a week would be enough to win you the category.
But that's not telling you to draft him at that point.
That's how the rankings come out.
No, but that's the thing. They're not rankings. They're not rankings drafted this position. That's not what they are. their projections of overall value, but it's not, say, draft this guy at this position. It's not the way that those numbers come out. Like, I'll draft guys from that, you know, when I'm looking at my list that are 20 spots below the top guy because he fits sort of what I need at that point in the draft. It's not as straightforward, like, just draft this guy first. Like, you know, when I come back and look at my team and look at my projections, there'll be people who are unowned, who are ranked higher than some of the players that I own, but I won't drop those players and grab them because it's not a simple cookie cutter, let's grab the guy who's highest on the list, you know, depending on the way you rank. So I could debate that I'd draft Vucevic over Gasol in a lot of situations, regardless of any sort of punt build, because I'm a little bit worried about what happens with the front court this season and can Powell replicate what he did, all that sort of stuff. But it's not saying to necessarily draft these people over this other person just because their number comes out higher based on that punt build.
But it's like later in the draft, if you get to pick 70 and you're punting blocks and you've got Zach Randolph sitting there and Marchand Gortat, and you're like, oh no, I'm punting blocks, I don't need them, I'll just get Zach Randolph. Well, why not get Marchand Gortat, get some better percentages? It might cost you 2 rebounds a game, but then you can still get some blocks along the way.
But what if you need points and rebounds and you don't need percentages?
Well, Marchand Gortat's still going to get you 8 to 10 rebounds a game. He might not get you 12, but you can easily make those rebounds up at the end of the draft or off the waiver wire.
But can you make up the extra 5 or 6 points that he scores?
Well, you could, but you've got to be very, very careful when you're either punting points or relying on winning points. Anyone can come out and score. We saw Mo Williams and Corey Brewer, I think it was, drop 50-point games. Brandon Jennings dropped 50 points in his rookie season. So anyone can come out and have a big scoring game.
They can, but people can also do that in any sort of category, really. We can have anybody come out and grab. You know, Al-Farouq Aminu had a 20-rebound game. Like, people can come out and have you know, stupid assist nights. Reggie Jackson's a pretty good point guard, but he had a 20-assist night, which is not something that we necessarily would have associated with him. Brandon Jennings did the same thing. He had a 20-assist night. People can come out and have big. You know, James Johnson, I think, had a 5-steal, 5-block night. And, like, that's a big, big chunk towards winning both of those categories in 1 week from a guy that, if for some reason you rostered him. All these things can happen. Yeah, someone can come out and score big, but people can come out and hit huge amounts of threes in one game. Terrence Ross, does that ring a bell? Like, he came out and hit 10 in a game and didn't do it again ever and probably never will again. But those sort of big performances can happen in any category. So I think it's unfair to single it out in points, saying someone can come out and have big points, because it can happen in pretty much any category that someone can come out and have a huge game that swings that category for you. And in a head-to-head league, yes, it's important to get a win each week, but you just want to make sure you get into the playoffs and give yourself as strong a position as you can heading into those playoffs. One thing I do want to mention in terms of punting and the definition of punting is, I mentioned before, this Superstars of Fantasy League that we went into was a 9-category league. I had to pick 8. And 9-category league, I'm not paying attention to turnovers, therefore I'm punting them. But when the projections come out and you look at my turnovers, I'm probably the third best team in turnovers. Not because I tried to make them bad, just because I didn't factor them into consideration when I drafted that category. Now, I also didn't want to factor blocks into consideration at that pick. I didn't think that was going to be something that was going to work in my favor. And my block came out really bad. I'm the worst team in blocks, but it enabled me to strengthen a few other areas. But the point that I'm trying to get across is that I literally turned, in the Basketball Monster projections, I turned the punt onto turnover, didn't draft it, and still finished up with probably the fourth best score in the turnover category, because I wasn't paying attention to it, and that's what will happen during the season. Some weeks I'll win it, some weeks I won't, and that'll happen with many categories that you punt, because the idea is not to be as bad as you can. You're not trying to go out there and get every single bad free throw shooter, so you end up with 60% free throws. You could punt free throws and have a free throw percentage of 75%. That is definitely a possibility. It means you're not going to be a lock to win it every week, but you're going to win some matchups, you'll lose some matchups, but you're not trying to make it as bad as possible. And I think that's the point that I'm trying to get across, just to change that mindset that you aren't trying to make these categories as bad as possible. You're not factoring it in when you're valuing who you're picking and where you're picking them.
Well, that's what a lot of people do. They'll go and get DeAndre Jordan and back it up with Andre Drummond and completely write off their free throw percentage.
And that can be a problem, because you know what that also does? That means your points are going to be in trouble. You're going to struggle to get assists. Your steal numbers aren't going to be great. That becomes a problem. But pairing someone like Andre Drummond with Steph Curry, is even as Steph Curry shoots 90%, his value doesn't all come from free throws. His value is his high assists, his high scoring, his high three-pointers, his high steal numbers. That's where Steph Curry's value from. His super high field goal percentage as a guard. You can pair him with Andre Drummond. Yeah, your free throws will drop right down, but then you're going to get high points, high threes, high assists, high steals, high rebounds, high blocks, and really high field goal percentage. And that's a situation where Curry's free throws, they're okay, and they're a pretty solid building point and building block, but they're not the main source of his value. And if you go into Basketball Monster and turn on the punt free throw percentage button, Steph Curry drops from number one to number two, I think, or number three. Like, it's not a big chunk of his value. So, and you're right, we agree on this, you're right to point that out. A lot of people do that. They'll deliberately target guys and think the only way I can punt free throws is by getting Drummond, Howard, Jordan, Plumlee, and Whiteside. And it's not. You don't want to be bad in a category. If it happens, oh well, whatever. It happens. But you don't want to be bad. Look, I punted assists one season and I drafted Chris Paul. Now, that's not the way that I designed it at first, but the way the rest of my team, you know, shaped up after the first couple of weeks, I punted assists and I had Chris Paul. But you know why? What I was good with Chris Paul? Because then I actually ended up winning turnovers pretty much every week. My steals were out of this world. He was getting like 2.5 or 3 steals a game down the stretch in that season. He had a really good field goal percentage for a point guard, and he was able to hit some threes. And that's another thing. Like, sometimes your best player who's best value, it's not necessarily that you have to rely upon it. As like with Curry, you can actually punt free throws with Curry. Now, a James Harden situation is a little bit different story because he has a massive, massive value in free throw percentage. And if you're pairing him with a terrible shooter, that's a little bit of a difficult situation because you're wasting a lot of his value. And I think that's what you want to try and avoid.
So in our Red Rock listener league for this season, you're punting assists.
Yes, correct? I am. Yep.
Assists and threes. Now, you've only got one point guard eligible player on your roster, which is George Hill. Now, yep. Regardless of what George Hill has just rolled his ankle the other day.
Yep.
What are you going to do with that roster spot when the Pacers don't play?
I'll have to look at my team for a start. I've got to bring it up.
Well, I can tell you.
I'm looking at it now. Look, I've got a couple of guys on there that I want to see how they go. Rodney Hood, Ben McLemore, Patrick Patterson. If it doesn't work out, I just move someone in. And what I do normally the first week or two of the season, I normally lose those matchups as I'm trying to work out the best way to build my team and to sort them out. And what I'd end up doing is I'd probably grab another point guard at some point. There'd be a guy who will come out and won't be a high value assist guy that I will add at that stage. And the way the NBA schedules worked out, Matt, is a lot of the time I don't think I'm going to be really left with, say, 9 players starting and the whole guys on my bench sitting and then George Hill doesn't play. It might happen a couple of times, but overall, I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue. I've dealt with that sort of same situation in many leagues before. I'll probably end up getting another point guard at some point, and depending on how this preseason plays out. But it's not something that bothers me at this point.
But if you don't stream that position, you're just wasting a spot and wasting games. You're just throwing away games and starts.
That's only on nights when 10 of my players are playing. And that might be one night a week, maybe, and that night then has to coincide with the night that George Hill doesn't play. So it might end up being one game a week.
And then if you pick up Aaron Brooks because Derrick Rose doesn't play and you're punting threes, then he doesn't help you anyway.
Yeah, but he'll add to my points, he'll get some steals. So he'll help me in those categories.
Yeah, but why didn't you just go and get another point guard in the draft, and that would have alleviated that problem?
Well, I did try to just grab a point guard, but you snagged Zach LaVine off me, so I would have had that second point guard.
The only good thing about that now is you can go and pick up Tony Roten.
I saw that you dropped Tony Roten. Actually, that's an interesting move. Your boyfriend's back on the waiver wire, but look, I'll end up with another point guard on this team. I've got no doubt about it. I just wanted to. Yeah, at the end of the roster, at the end of the draft, I was looking at a couple of point guards and thought, you know what, Hood's probably a guy that I want to take a gamble on with that last pick. I want to see exactly what happens with him throughout the preseason and how they work out the minutes and all that sort of stuff happens. If it doesn't work out, he can go. Like, McLemore might go. He wasn't good. Ballinelli and Darren Collison played a lot better than him. He might be a guy that goes. And then I'll bring in a guy like, I don't even know if these guys are available. Jerian Grant might be available. Jose Calderon might be available. Patrick Beverley might be available, and I'll just add one of those guys in. There'll be some low-level point guards that I can get in and to help me in the areas that I need them to help me in.
And this is the other negative to punting. Punting gives you little to no flexibility in a number of areas. The other week I asked you in our dynasty league about trading Rudy Gay, but you couldn't move Rudy Gay because you needed him for your power forward eligibility because you didn't have anyone else on your roster.
Yeah, that's true. But I go into drafts with that in mind because I made one trade all of last season. I'm not a big trader at all. I draft guys for specific purposes. Sometimes it bites me on the ass. Most of the time it ends up being okay, and I'm pretty happy with the way most of my teams work out. I understand, Mac, that you win leagues with your method, and the overall thing about it is it's getting value, and that's what it all comes down to. You mentioned before about Zach and how he finished so high in his categories, but he got like 30 position bargains on half of the guys that he drafted, and that's not easy to do. And if you do that, you're going to be hard to beat, no matter what sort of situation you're putting yourself in or what sort of way you're looking at building your team. If you get value at half of your picks, like significant 2-3 round upgrades at every pick, then it's going to be hard to beat no matter what you're doing.
But then if you're punting, you're not looking for that value. You're looking for the categories you want to be strong in. You're drafting overall value. If you're punting free throw percentage and you get to the end of your draft, you're going to grab Andrew Bogut. You're not looking for, last season's Draymond Green who might break out.
Why not? I'm punting 3-pointers, and my last three picks were my last four picks were Patrick Patterson, Ben McLemore, Joe Johnson, and Rodney Hood, whose best value was all in 3-pointers.
Well, because one
or two of those guys might break out.
So what if you're punting blocks and then you didn't go and draft Rudy Gobert last season?
Yeah, well, I punted blocks in the league and then I picked up Hassan Whiteside and then I was able to actually change my strategy because he was good enough to actually swing that category back in my favor. It didn't preclude me from grabbing him. I just said, okay, well, how is the addition? If I added Whiteside, let me see how it works out. What does my team look like in blocks with him? How does that affect my free throw percentage? Yep, I can make this work. A couple other quick little end of bench moves, and it worked. It was in a league with Seth. It was a relatively big money league. I ended up finishing second overall in that league. A couple of injuries in the final cost me. I think I ended up only losing 5-4 or 6-3. But you can make moves. You seem to think that if you lock yourself into a strategy, you can't get out of it. And that's not the case at all. You can make moves. And as I said, I took these guys. I took Hood. I took McLemore, who, in essence, they're 3-point shooters. But the threes are not a category that I'm looking to be competitive in that league. But I think that those guys, there's a chance that they become top 100 players and help out in other areas and develop value. And that then, if they all become great, then I might have to reconsider the way that my threes are. My threes might then become competitive. Even though they're not at the moment, they might become a middle of the range category, and then they're not a punting situation. So it's not like I completely ignore value players. And that's what I said. It's not about grabbing that first guy on the list. Otherwise, if you're not punting turnovers, you're going to be grabbing Brandon Wright at pick 80, and that's not going to be that's not what you want to do. And you're not going to want to grab Andrew Bogut at pick 60 or whatever, because sometimes he comes out that high if you're punting points. You're not going to want to do it. It's not about grabbing everyone just off that list. There's a lot more nuance to it.
But once you draft DeAndre Jordan, you're stuck with him. You're not getting rid of him. Another owner is not going to come along and take him unless he's punting free throw percentage.
That is completely true. You can draft DeAndre Jordan, and you have to know that if you're drafting DeAndre Jordan. And I don't ever draft people with the express intention, I'm going to draft this guy and trade him later on, and that's fine. But if you draft DeAndre Jordan, you're never going to be able to find someone off the waiver wire who's going to come in and be a free throw percentage machine that's going to turn that around. It's just not going to happen. But if something happens to DeAndre Jordan, then your free throw percentage might go back up. You might become competitive again in that category. There's lots of ways that things can go. The overall theme of this is, Matt, that there are numerous ways to win. There's not one specific way to win. There's no one right way. You've won without punting, I've won. You've won plenty of times without punting, I've won plenty of times with punting. I just want to make myself the strongest for the playoffs and give myself, and what I will also do is I will refine my punting strategy halfway, three quarters of the way through the season when I see who the top five teams are. How do I compete against these five teams? Like, how does my team match up against them? Can I strengthen it? Have I got say I'm borderline okay in steals, and but these other guys are really bad at steals. Then I'll go, okay, well, I don't need to be great at steals. I can maybe move a steals guy out, That'll cost me a little bit, but I can really strengthen another area to make sure I'm really beating these guys in the categories where I can easily get the victories over them. I want to adjust my strategy based on then who I'm going to start looking at in the playoffs. And that's another key point, that when you head that January, February point in time, are you in the playoffs? Yes. Who are you going to play? How are you going to fare against them?
I want to go back to this flexibility and the concept of punting.
Yep.
It also gives you limited roster and positional flexibility. So like in the listener, like if you're punting assists and you've loaded up on forwards, power forward, centre eligible players, you're going to be having to use those players in your utility spots because you've got so many. Now, if under my strategy, if you're drafting to be strong in all categories, you're giving yourself that positional flexibility. So if I need to catch up on rebounds, then I can go big in terms of my roster. I can play guys like small forwards like Giannis or PJ Tucker at that shooting guard spot, move a power forward player like Terrence Jones to Nikola Mirotic, the small forward, et cetera, et cetera, and just load up on those rebounding stats and then stream through some of the top rebounding guys off the waiver wire.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Matt, but the way that I look at it, I'm just going to bring up these numbers again, the projected numbers from the listener league, and you say that you know, I punted assists, but I've got 7 wing players on my team, so half my roster are wing guys. They're not power forwards or centers. I've got a lot more flexibility. I've got Butler, I've got DeRozan, I've got Ben McLemore, Joe Johnson, Rodney Hood, and then George Hill is also shooting guard eligible. The other guys are power forward centers, but I've got a lot of wing players as well. Yes, I don't have point guards. But I'll go ahead and look at your team, and again, this is based on the Basketball Monster projections, Matt, but yeah, your team, I've got, say, my worst category is assists that I'm punting. I've got a negative 4.48 score for that. Your points category is negative 4.23. So that could almost be considered a punt. Your average over your team is average 12.6 points. Your 3-point is a negative 2.8. Now that's you know, my 3 is a negative 3.37. I'm at 0.73s, you're at 0.83s, yet I'm punting them and you're not. What's the difference there?
Well, I'm more likely to win 3s with Jeff Teague, Kyrie Irving, CJ McCollum, and then stream some of these guys through. If you're not trying to win 3s,
yep,
then you're going to be loading up on your big man stats. You've got I'll have to bring your team up, like Brooke Lopez, Nerlens Noel, DeMarcus Cousins. Why's your team name I Heart Byron Scott? Anyway, you hate Byron Scott. Enos Kanter, to play all these guys, you're going to have to fill your utility position with them.
Yep. I am, but they're not all playing all on the same day. I said I've got a lot of wing guys as well that I can move in. My last 5 guys on my roster all average 1.5, 1.3, 1.6, 1.3, 1.6 threes a game. And if I was playing you, the difference between our team in 3-pointers, I could potentially beat you in threes even though I'm punting it and you're not.
Well, why have you got these guys on your trading block?
Because I want to see if I can get some more value from them.
Trade me Ben McLemore.
For who?
Zach LaVine.
I will consider that.
Anyway, back to punting. So, and once again, we're dealing with like schedule as well. So what if we come to a week, and in terms of games played difference, there might be one team might be playing 52 games and another team might be playing 45 games. So there's 7 games difference, which even punting can't overcome. Like, we're dealing with a number of factors here. There's so many factors in life, let alone fantasy basketball. Like DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard, these guys are often getting in foul trouble. So what if you get a game or two a week where they get in foul trouble, they have a poor game, they get in the coach's doghouse, and they only get 6 rebounds and 1 block. And if they've only got 3 games in a week and they've had a below par game in either 1 or 2, then you're stuffed in those categories.
But then what you do also do in that case, if they're not playing as much, then maybe your free throw percentage is okay. But you could also say that in any sort of format. What if you have whoever, Russell Westbrook, and he gets injured in the first 5 minutes in one game during the week, and he doesn't play that game, and you might not be punting anything, but you're still losing a stack of value. What if you've got your Rudy Gobert, and Rudy Gobert fouls out in 10 minutes and then misses the next game, or gets ejected in 10 minutes, misses the next game? How are you going to recover your blocks? How are you going to recover your field goal percentage? How are you going to recover your rebounds?
Because I've still looked after it by drafting other players.
But, yeah, that's exactly. But if I'm punting categories and I'm building around a big man strategy, you're not, and we both lose Gobert, even though that's impossible in a normal league, but we both lose Gobert, theoretically, isn't my team better suited to withstand that loss because I've got other guys who are going to help in that situation?
But I've still got other guys. I'm not drafting just drafting Rudy Gobert and saying, that's it, I'm done in boards and blocks. Then I'm getting Greg Monroe. Then I'm getting Tyson Chandler. Then I'm getting Terrence Jones. Like, I'm building on strength.
But that's it. That's the best phrase of the day, Matt. That is exactly what punting is. It's building on your strengths. That's what it is. That's exactly what I try to do, is build on my strengths.
Well, then how come you're telling people if they've drafted James Harden to punt field goal percentage?
Because field goal percentage is not one of his strengths.
Well, in 32 out of his 81 games last season, he shot better than 47% from the field. So in 40% of his games, he was 47% or better from the field. So why would you deliberately make that category worse?
But what was he in the other ones?
Well, of course he's going to have games where he shoots 40% or 42% from the field. But in a five-game stretch in December, he went 58 from 103 from the field for 56%. In another five-game stretch in January, he went 44 from 75 from the field to 58%. So these weeks, you should be dominating field goal percentage. If you haven't significantly or deliberately made your categories worse, you should be turning these 5-4 victories into 7-2 or 8-1 dominant wins.
But that, the same with, that, that's the same all with true. Scenario that you
might. Now, he was 58% from the field over his last five games. He hasn't shot over 42% from the field over for the course of a season since his rookie season. So if you're like, oh, I've got Danilo Gallinari and his crap at field goal percentage, and then you're just like, oh, I'm just gonna devalue it by keep drafting players who are crap in that category, and then he can come out and win you that category on his own. There's peaks and troughs, and once your players are at that peak, that's when you need to capitalize.
There is peaks and troughs, but nobody's got any way of being able to project peaks and troughs. You don't know when that peak or that trough is going to come. So you can't rely on someone who is a season-long 44% shooter like Harden. You can't go, yeah, he'll probably in my playoffs, he'll probably go on a stretch where he shoots 51%. Therefore, I think that he'll be good in that area. You can't. That'll happen. There'll be times when he shoots 38% and shoots 41% because the numbers average out to 44. Sometimes it'll be worse. Sometimes it'll be better, clearly, because that's what an average means. But you can say that he'll have these stretches, but he'll also have stretches where he'll be significantly below that average, significantly below. If he's averaging 44 for the season and in 40 games he averaged over 47, that means in the other 40, he must have been relatively significantly under 44% for him to get an average of 44%.
But that's why I'm still looking after drafting guys like Al Horford or Marcin Gortat or Tyson Chandler, because they might go 50% from the field, but they might go 65% from the field. So you're still evening it out.
But, okay, so in the last week of the season, Harden shot 38.5% on 16 field goal attempts. You know, in order to even that out, you're going to need you could even it out and you become average in field goal percentage, but you'd need two pretty high volume field goal percentage guys to actually bring that number back to level.
Yeah, but at least if you're still looking after it and you can get it back into the mid-40s, you still have a chance of winning that category rather than just completely writing it off.
But I don't see a problem in writing it off. I'd rather just strengthen myself in other areas and insulate them against fluctuations, insulate them against variance as much as possible. I don't want to have to be playing with variance where these things can swing significantly. I'd rather be able to try and insulate myself from that variance as much as I can. Harden's got the big free throw percentage. Therefore, I don't want to surround him with all crap free throw guys. So your team then comes back to being a little bit, above average. I'd rather just have a pretty strong free throw percentage. So that if someone has a bad week, which he had a stretch at one point where he did have a bad free throw week. He had like three games where he shot poorly, but the other guys in my team will keep it going and building on that strength. Have I lost you with that?
No, I was falling asleep then, sorry. Well, so what are you going to do if someone's on the same punt strategy as you?
You beat them in other areas. It's easy enough to do.
So if someone takes, this is probably a bad example because they're different players, but if someone's taking Anthony Davis at pick one and they're going on a punt assist strategy,
yep.
And then the owner at pick four selects Durant and he's also punting assist. So then when you come to round two, that Durant owner's taking one of the players at the top of your list in this punt assist build.
Yeah.
So then you're fighting over the same limited pool of players.
But if you aren't punting, isn't your player pool then reduced as well? You're not drafting Drummond, you're not drafting Jordan, you're not drafting Plumlee, you're not drafting Howard, you're not drafting Rubio, you're not drafting Kemba. Like, there's numerous guys that you aren't drafting in a non-punt strategy as well that other people are then competing for you with.
Exactly, because people who are punting are taking them and leaving me all these value guys.
But if you get Kemba at pick 70, that's significant value. If you get Rubio at pick 80, that's great value.
I don't want Rubio at pick 80 because it's just destroyed my field goal percentage. And that's I can go into the draft with that clear mindset. It doesn't matter how far Ricky Rubio falls, how far Dwight Howard falls. It doesn't matter. I'm not drafting them because I'm looking after my percentages. It doesn't matter in round four whether I'm getting Isaiah Thomas, Brandon Knight, Tyreke Evans. They're all doing a similar sort of thing without ruining percentages or a category. I've got a group of guys there who I can pick from.
Now, let's be honest. Isaiah Thomas is doing nothing similar to Ricky Rubio. He's scoring and he's hitting threes while Rubio's getting you 10 assists and 2 steals. Like, they do completely different things. And it really, I mentioned this so many times, it really depends on what you're looking for at specific points in the draft. I'm going to end up with Rubio on a number of my teams because people are going to be discounting him, but it's only going to be in situations where I'm discounting field goal percentage and I'm not caring about it. But I think that gives him tremendous value and that enables me to get a player with significant value late in the draft. Same with Kemba. Same with, I probably won't end up punting free throws in any league this season, so I don't think I'll end up with Jordan. And the point you make is right, that no matter how far Jordan falls, no matter how far Howard falls, if I'm not punting that category, I don't want anything to do with them. And then that's a key point. Don't build yourself with strength in that category and then go, Dwight Howard's there at 75. I might as well grab him because that's not a good move. Just because it, and that's where you have to make the delineation between, yeah, that's value because Dwight Howard should be a top 40 player and he's there at 75, but it's not value. And that it's value is not a clearly cut, defined thing, because on the surface, getting a player who's top 40 at pick 70 sounds like good value, but it's not in that sort of situation.
And then that's where I'll do the same thing with injury guys. It doesn't matter how far Derrick Rose falls. I don't care if he's 150. I won't draft him, but just because I don't want to take on that headache.
You see, I'm a little bit different with injuries. At some point, I agree, you don't want to take them at their peak, but once they start getting 30, 40 spots lower, then I'm happy to take them at that stage, because you're probably going to end up streaming through the last 4 or 5 picks on your roster anyway. If they work out, there's some upside there. There is definitely, and you don't want to have many of them. That's another point. You don't want to have too many injury risk players, but I'm never discounting anybody completely from my team based on injuries in the past. Like a guy like Wes Matthews, I'm not going to draft this season unless I get him with the last pick and can put him on an IR spot. Then maybe I'll do it, but I don't want to take him. Drew Holiday, I'm not going to draft because we're not going to get any sort of value from him until next year some point. But even then, I could talk myself into it in a 200 deep roto league where I can stash him on the bench for 3 months. Maybe I'll do it that way. There's always little bits and pieces to it, because I could be surrounded with 10 other or 11 other Matt Smiths in my league who aren't going to touch Drew at all, and I could get him at pick 180, and then it's okay. It's unlikely that's going to be the case, but it could be.
Are we wrapping up punting?
I think so. I want to hear from everybody who's listening your thoughts on it. You know what? We're going to get a 50-50 split of people saying no punting, people saying punting, and we're going to get 50-50 of them winning their leagues anyway. So, in essence, it's what you're comfortable with.
We're going to get more on the punting side, because if you go into any forum, go onto Twitter and questions, the first thing that comes up when you're discussing head-to-head, when people ask about head-to-head, the next thing that comes up is punting. And it irks me when people say it's the best way or the only way to win head-to-head leagues. That's crap. So if you're new to head-to-head basketball, just don't naturally go down the punting route. There is another way. And before we wrap up, I will give people an alternate strategy to punting, just so they know. So they've got something and they say, well, if you're not punting, what's your strategy? I'll quickly do that now, Josh, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
And this is the strategy that I use. I haven't come up with the strategy. I read this 10 to 15 years ago, and I've been molding it, if you like, to not to make it my own, but to use it as best I can. And that's, hang on, Sam sent us a tweet. Can't help but notice that without punting, Josh, something. You can read that in a minute. Anyway, my strategy, point guards and power forwards, or in this case, guards. You want guards who get your least. And this is roughly, you can, there's a little bit of give in this strategy, but this is fairly rough, if you like. Draft point guards or guards who get your least 5 assists, 1 steal, 1 three per game with good free throw percentage. So I'm looking at 76, 78% higher than that, and don't significantly hurt your field goal percentage. So roughly around 42-43%, is low enough, but once again, that depends on volume. And then we're drafting power forwards and centers who get you rebounds, blocks, shoot over 50% from the field, and don't significantly hurt you from the free throw line. So that's your Jordan and your Drummonds. Right now, Rudy Gobert is fine because of his low volume. If he gets up to 4 attempts a game, he's likely to go on that list of do not draft because of his free throws. Now, once we're loading up on point guards and power forward centers, to round out your draft, you can get shooting guards and small forwards, and they can either fill a statistical need or continue to build on strength. So it might mean you need 3s. You can go and get JJ Redick, JR Smith, these type of guys. If you want steals and blocks, someone like Al-Farouq Aminu. If you need more rebounds, Otto Porter, field goal percentage, maybe get Harrison Barnes, et cetera, et cetera. And hopefully you've looked after your percentages enough during the draft that you can take a small hit. If you need, like I said, with JR, he can be terrible from the field, but if you looked after your field goal percentage and you're at that 48% to 50%, adding JR Smith might drop you a percent or two, but it's also going to win you 3s in more than 1 week. So that's the strategy which I use, point guards and power forwards. It's out there. If you want to search, Google it. I wrote about it in the Fantasy Hoops Insider draft kit for last season. So if you want some more information around that, let me know. But in my opinion, give yourself the best chance to win any category in any given week.
Okay, that's the wrap-up of the punting. You know my thoughts on it. I don't want... Yeah, I'm punting. Matt's not. Let us know your thoughts via Twitter. Hit us up and let us know which way you like to go. And the thing we need to stress, mate, is there is no one way of doing it. You know, I can easily say that you win leagues without doing it, and you can say the same thing about me, that I'll go ahead and I'll win leagues by doing it. And you know, by that rationale, and the means of other people that play fantasy, or people who do and people who don't punt, you can win it either way. And most of it comes down to building your team smartly. And I think the biggest key, and this is something that I mentioned the other day, I was speaking with Kyle McEwen the other day, we were twittering back and forth, and I can't think of the exact phrase that I used, but it doesn't come down to the players necessarily that you get at the spot. It comes down to the way you build your team. And you can't say, look at these players that I got, but if they don't fit together in the right way, then it's pointless. It's about how you build your team, not necessarily who you build it with. And there's a little bit of crossover in that, but it's all about building things correctly. And that's, you know, not to go back to Basketball Monster too much, but that's one of the key things in that draft tracker. You can really see how you're building your team during the draft and see how things are actually working out and how your team is projected to finish in all these sort of things. So make sure you go and check that out. Now, Matt, we've got a lot of other stuff to cover apart from punting. A few questions came into us via the listeners, a few other issues in the NBA. Let's go with these questions first. Okay, pick 8 in an 8-cat roto league, a 14-team league. Who should he target, Boogie or John Wall? He says, there seems to be better power forward centers in the second round. So who do you look at pick 8 in an 8-cat roto league?
Yeah, this one's quite tough because, you know, my love for point guards, and I usually take a point guard in the first round, but in this case, I think there's a pretty big difference between DeMarcus Cousins and John Wall. So in an 8-cat league, DeMarcus Cousins is, I think, my 6th ranked player. John Wall is about my 9th. So in this case, I would take Cousins, and then your next picks are 21 and 36. So I'd look at definitely look at a point guard or even two with those two next picks, someone like Kyrie Irving, depending on his injury, Jeff Teague, Kyle Lowry, or get a shooting guard, Oladipo, Bledsoe, who can get you sort of that 4-5 assist once again, the 5 assists, steals, and 3. So I'd go Boogie and then guard with my next two picks, more than likely.
I would go Boogie as well. I've got Boogie at 8 in 8 Cat Roto. I've got Wall at 9, but the difference between them isn't necessarily that close. There is a pretty significant difference. We're talking like a 25% drop-off in value between Cousins and Wall at that point. So I would take Cousins there. But he is right. In the second round, there's not many point guard options. Your point guard options start to become littered through the 24 to 55 range. And even then, there's some late-round point guards you can get as well. But I think that not even necessarily dependent on your first-round pick, your second and third, you probably want to go big in the second round, point guard in the third. Or if you're at the back of the second round, you can go two point guards there, depending on what you've done in the first round. But that early second round area, there's not many point guards who you really want to take at that point. I think we can all sort of agree with that. It's more wings and bigs around that point of the draft.
Where's the love for Jeff Teague and Kyle Lowry gone this year? They've just dropped down into the 30 range. Like, Kyle Lowry was a second round pick last season.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry was really. Where have I got Kyle Lowry in these 8 cat roto leagues? I can't see where he is. Yeah, he's down relatively low. Look, it's because he was really good at the start of the season and he was really bad at the end of the season. I'm hoping on a bit of a bounce back for him. The numbers aren't coming out all that great on him at the moment, but I think that he can be significantly better, and I've got no problem taking him in the 30s this season. I think that that's definitely a fine one. The thing I worry about with Teague is the fact that the last 3 months of the season, Matt, he played less than 30 minutes a night. He only ended up playing 31 minutes a game for the season. It's not a huge workload. And then when he was down at 29 minutes for those last 3 months, Budenholzer benched him, and not benched him for rest necessarily, but benched him for poor play for big stretches of games down the stretch. I'm a little bit concerned that maybe he doesn't get back to, or maybe he doesn't play 33 minutes. That's what worries me.
I still like both of them.
I like Jeff Teague a lot. I'm a massive fan of Jeff Teague, but that concerns me.
But I know this is off the topic once again, but I'm really interested to see how they negate the loss of Damari Carroll, because they don't have a ready-made replacement, whether it's Bazemore, whether they give Schroeder extra minutes.
Bazemore's just not good. I'm sorry.
That's right. Who was the Tim Hardaway? Didn't they get him?
Hardaway, Cephalosha, Bazemore. Like, these guys are not good. None of them are good. Like, Hardaway has probably got the best pedigree, but he's been just dreadful. Cephalosha's coming off a night-sticked ankle. Who knows what he's going to be able to do? And he's not an offensive threat at all, and his defense actually dropped off a little bit as well, as did his three-point shooting. And Kent Bazemore's just not a good player. He had a stretch of about 2 weeks on a piss-poor Lakers team where he put up good scoring numbers, but he's a horrible shooter. He's a bad free throw shooter. He's a great towel waiver, but as a starting shooting guard, that's not your job. I don't think he's that good. I don't think that any of those guys should be standard league guys at all. Not even close.
No, and they're just bodies. So it just makes me think even more that Jeff Teague is going to get the big minutes and he's going to put up the numbers, because they're going to have to rely on him more. They'll probably move Kyle Korver to small forward. And I know it's a really small backcourt, but I think they're going to have to run Teague and Schroeder together at times.
Well, I've got Teague at 31 minutes, and in 8 cat head-to-head leagues, I've got him ranked at 27th. So, even in those limited minutes, I think he can still be really good. And he could get more than that, but I think Schroeder's going to be, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with Schroeder this year. You know, I'm a massive Schroeder fan. I think you're a pretty big Schroeder fan as well. I'm really interested to see what he's going to be able to do this season. The next question takes us from 8 cat roto to 8 cat head-to-head leagues. Who are your top 5 players in 8 cat head-to-head leagues?
Anthony Davis, Steph Curry, James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Russell Westbrook.
Okay. Have you got Davis number 1 in 8 cat head-to-head leagues?
Got Davis number 1 everywhere.
No, in 8 cat to me, it's Curry. Curry is the number 1 player in 8 cat leagues. He was the number 1 player last year in 8 cat leagues. I think he'll be the number 1 player again this year in 8 cat leagues. He is, in the way that my numbers come out, he is significantly better than Davis for 8 category leagues. Davis is better in 9 category leagues, there's no doubt about that. But to me, in 8 cat, I want Curry. I've got Curry, Davis, Harden, and then I have Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook as 4 and 5. You could easily put Kevin Durant in there, but I'm basing this just off the way the projections are coming out in terms of their head-to-head value. But taking Durant at 4, there's risk involved in it, we saw him play today. He didn't look worried. He didn't look bothered by the foot, but that's not the concern. You're not concerned that he's going to be rusty. You're not concerned that he's going to be limited by it. You're concerned that he's going to re-break it. I think that's the concern. Do you have any worry about him at pick four?
I thought you'd have Cousins in your top five.
I've got him at... Where have I got him? I've got him at... He's at seven. But
so where's Durant? Six.
Durant's at six. But the top eight, look, there's the top, to me, there's the top three guys, then there's the next five guys who are, it goes, there's three guys, there's five guys, then there's about 20 guys who are close. And, you know, I'm drafting in a draft this week and I've got pick nine and it's such a shit pick. I wish I had pick eight. Like, I'm not a fan of pick nine at all. Like, I think I know what I'm going to do there, but it's such a drop off behind those top eight guys. And, you know, I picked at pick eight in the Superstars draft on the weekend. I got Chris Paul at pick eight. I think that's, you know, but I could have had Cousins fall to me at eight. I could have had LeBron fall to me at eight. I could have had Westbrook fall to me at eight. You could be picking at four. I've seen numerous posts on Reddit about, you know, who do you pick at pick four? Do I pick Harden or do I pick Westbrook? If Harden's falling to you at four, like, you lap that up. That is amazing value. Anywhere in that top eight is and you don't win your draft in your first round pick, pretty much. You lose it, but you don't win it.
This leads us into our next question. I think the top nine, I reckon John Wall's that ninth player.
Yeah, I think he is too. I think he's pretty clearly the ninth player.
And then it drops off at 10.
Yeah, but to me, look, it does drop off, but the difference between Cousins and Wall is significant enough for me to take him out of that top eight.
Yeah.
What's the next question? Quickly discuss the end of round one options. Okay, so I guess it depends how big your round one is. Are you 10 or 12 team league? So we could be talking John Wall, Paul George, Damian Lillard, Kawhi Leonard, Klay Thompson, Carmelo Anthony, Jimmy Butler. They're probably the main names there. Anyone else? Rudy Gobert, Blake Griffin. Which of the... Okay, so say we go to 12. Let's go through these names. So say we have a 12-team league. Jimmy Butler at pick 12. Yes or no?
Yes.
No. Kawhi Leonard at pick 12.
Yes, but after Jimmy Butler.
Kawhi after Jimmy.
So I'll take Butler at 11 and Kawhi at 12.
Okay. I wouldn't have Butler at 12. Gobert at 12. I know you're going to say yes.
After my nine, Jimmy Butler and Rudy Gobert are my next two. And it's pretty clear cut. And then Kawhi's in that mix. Paul George, we've talked about before. Even though he had a good game yesterday, I don't trust him. Don't trust Melo. No. Player don't want. Griffin's got his limitations. So I'm really excited about Jimmy Butler this season. I think he's going to have a, I'm not going to say a massive season because he had a really good season last year. I reckon he can replicate. Yeah, he can replicate. And I still think he's got room for growth in terms of his assists and threes. And Rudy Gobert, there's a massive hole in terms of big men who can block shots and get you reasonable free throw percentage. So Rudy Gobert is going to be super valuable this season. So I wouldn't hesitate at taking those guys at pick 10, 11, 12 at the turn at the back end of your 10 or 12 team leagues.
The problem with Rudy Gobert is, and I discussed this the other day on a podcast with Kyle, I think, is that his projected points were the lowest in the top 60 guys. So you really need to, like, you could pick Gobert at 12, but I think you're almost hamstrung that you need to grab Klay Thompson or you need to grab Carmelo Anthony at 13 so you can get a 20-point scorer. You don't want to, where am I? You don't want to combine him with Kawhi Leonard because it's going to be hard to get your points up. You don't want to combine him with Paul Millsap. You're not going to get your points up. Or you could maybe Damian Lillard maybe, but you need a lot of points to go with him there because if he gets 10 points a game, if he gets 11 points a game, it's going to be hard to come back from that category because points drop off so quickly. There are a couple of late-round guys, and you need to make sure, if you get Gobert and you don't get some points early, you need to make sure you're getting DeMar DeRozan. You need to make sure you're getting Isaiah Thomas. Like, who else? You need to make sure you're getting Dwayne Wade. But even then, there's an injury risk because who else is going to be able to get you points enough to get back up because points drop off so quickly. Where can you find another 20-point guy?
You can't. You just stream him through.
Yeah, and then that depends again on your league settings. Do you have game limits per week? Do you have transaction limits per week, per season? How does your streaming occur. Like we touched on earlier, Mo Williams had a 50-point game, but if you can predict when the game that Mo Williams is going to score 50, then you're a genius, and you're not going to be able to go, I'm going to add Mo Williams for this game because he's going to score 50, because you can't do that. Which, so in essence, yes, points are available on the waiver wire, but not consistently and not consistently high enough, and it makes it hard.
So who are you taking at pick 10 if you've got that pick?
At pick 10, I'm probably taking Lillard.
And then punting field goal percentage.
Most likely, or the other way, I would go with it. I'd be happy taking a Kawhi at that spot.
So what's your thoughts on Jimmy Butler?
I love Jimmy Butler. I'm a Bulls fan, obviously. I'm not a massive fan of his fantasy game. He was great last year for the value you got him at. I just think that if you're taking him, he wasn't end of the first round value last season. He was, I think, barely inside the top 20. I can't remember that, but he wasn't pick 12 value. So to think he's going to take that extra jump, to me, is a little bit concerning, and it means I'm grabbing him at absolute ceiling. I think he struggles to get to pick 12 value. I just don't know what he does great. What's his great strength?
Well, that's the thing, that no one there has, apart from Melo scoring and Clay's threes, which you can get later in the draft, no one has the rebounds and blocks. Like, we don't have a standout pick in this group. Is what I mean. Our options are limited.
Yeah, you don't. And this is a real sort of grey area in the draft. And there, even if I'm picking a pick 14, I don't hate Eric Bledsoe there. It's probably a little bit early, but I actually love Eric Bledsoe this season inside the top 20. I think he's going to be. Would you have him in the top 20? In an 8 cat league, I've got him at 16.
Yeah, I don't mind it. But once again, then you're probably pairing him with a Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook type, where I think I'd rather go small than big.
Yeah, and
if you're getting him with DeMarcus Cousins or Anthony Davis, I love it.
And that's another point exactly we were talking about, you know, drafting off lists. It depends who you got first. If Eric Bledsoe's in, you know, I've got him at 16, but if I grab someone else at that point and I don't necessarily want what he gives me at that stage, maybe I'll grab Marc Gasol at that point, which might feel like a reach of 6 or 7 picks, but maybe that works best for me at that point. Maybe it's whoever it is at that stage. That's maybe Blake Griffin's available there. Maybe Al Horford's there. Maybe it is Millsap that I grab at that point. And then, you know, instead of Bledsoe, I grab Oladipo 6 picks later. It's very dependent on who you think's going to be available and who is currently available. If there's 5 of one sort of player available and there's 2 of another, I'd probably grab the 2 of the other and then hope that I get one of those other 5 on the way back around. Try to build my team up properly. So yeah, I might have Eric Bledsoe at 16 based on overall value, but it doesn't mean I'm picking him at 16. I might just let him go completely. Where are we? Next question. Will Kyle Lowry's weight loss, improved quickness, result in an improved fantasy season?
I hope so. I don't see why not. Like, I'm on the wrong page here. Well, it has to help. He's consistently missed games across his whole career. He'll be 30 in March. He's got an inside and outside game, so losing weight, being lighter, it's got to help him not only game to game, but over the whole course of the season. So if it can improve him, you know, his quickness, his agility, getting to the basket, you know, step backs, crossovers, surely it's got to be a good thing. Can't be a bad thing, put it that way.
That's it. That's exactly right. It can't be a bad thing. I don't think it necessarily makes him, you know, all of a sudden this awesome top 15 sort of guy, but he could easily be a top 20 player. And I think he's a real underrated guy because people, tell what people are quick to do with Kyle Lowry. Oh, he played for a big contract. He's only ever had one good season. He always falls off. He's selfish. Whatever. He was fantastic last season. Straight after signing a big contract, this is a guess, but I reckon he was a top 10 player for about the first 2 months of the season. Is that crazy from memory? Like back end, maybe 10 or 11, maybe that sort of range.
Well, that's the thing. Like He was an early second round pick last season off memory, like somewhere between, say,
it was like 16 to 20 or something, I think.
Yeah, 14 to 18 or 15 to 20. Like, and now he didn't do anything wrong last season. And this is why
he got hurt.
I don't understand. Well, he got hurt, but he's still, how many games did he play? 70?
Yes. Yeah. That's about right. But you know what? Again, it is, he got hurt down the stretch. And he got hurt in people's fantasy playoffs, and people get pissed when that happens. This guy ruined my season. He got injured in the playoffs. Never drafting him again. this is ridiculous. He burned my team. Like, the guy doesn't care. It's not his fault. Like, he didn't do it on purpose to ruin your team. He got injured and he got at the wrong time. And it sticks in people's heads. You can get value out of that. People, they either discount the end of the season. So Lowry's teammate, DeMar DeRozan, was on fire down the stretch. He was a top 30 player down the stretch. But he was so bad to start the season with that groin problem, then coming back from the groin problem, that a lot of the people who may have owned DeMar DeRozan may have missed the playoffs, therefore they weren't paying attention to what he was doing. They'd be like, no, DeMar DeRozan, he stunk. I picked him at pick 50. I should have dropped him. I should have dropped his ass. He was terrible. But down the stretch, he was on fire. And then that's the opposite of Kyle Lowry, who was bad down the stretch. And the people who had him, who were in the playoffs, and then he ruined their season, they're pissed off with him as well. So you can get a lot of narrative just by reading fantasy basketball forums and seeing what people think, to go, okay, you're probably being a little bit irrational there by blaming everything and anything on Kyle Lowry. And I think the overall point, Matt, it can't hurt.
They may not have been in the playoffs if it wasn't for Kyle Lowry in the first place.
Exactly. And there's so many of those factors that can go into all of these things. But that's the thing. Yeah, he might have got them off to a hot start, got them in the playoffs, fell off, and people go, oh, bloody Lowry, shit. What's he doing? He doesn't deserve this contract. Whereas the DeRozan guys might not have got into the playoffs because he missed so much time. He came home in their consolation round when no one pays any attention. He was destroying guys, and then people discount him. And you have to really pay attention to a lot of these things that happen, because that enables you to go back to our start of the podcast. It enables you to get value. Kyle Lowry looks like a real valuable player this season. Greg Monro looks like a valuable player. He was a top 30 guy down the stretch last year. There's a lot of valuable players who could be in that situation. And then either they got hot stretch down the stretch and people didn't notice, or they ruined people down the stretch and people did notice. People are very focused negatively. So they see whatever happened most recently, if it was negative, they remember it. If it was positive, they discount it because something else negative overrode it earlier on. So that's my human psyche analysis for today. What's the next one? Tips for draft day. What preparation should be taken pre-draft to help, and actions during the draft? Well, we could probably talk a whole podcast on that, which I reckon we will at some point, but let's give one tip for draft day, Matt.
Don't panic.
Yep.
No, my tip for draft day is just be prepared. Just do all your planning, all your preparation, all your research before the draft. You don't want to be getting to just two guys sitting there and you don't know which one to pick. You should have done your research before. Be clear. Go into the draft knowing who you want, where you want them. Take them.
Yep. Have a plan of what you want to do, and have a plan of what you want to do if what you want to do doesn't happen. So I like to have two or three plans. This is what I set it out it's like a tree. And I mentioned this before. Here's my, depending on where, if I know where I'm picking, if I'm picking at pick one, I know who I'm picking at pick one. So that's fine. If I'm picking at pick two, I've probably got two or three options, but I'll have a list. These are the guys I want at this pick. If I get him here, then it branches off. Which guys do I target at each next pick? And if I get this guy, who do I target at the next pick? And go down and down based on O-ranks and ADP data, who is likely going to be available? And then if I miss this guy, what do? Do I move my next pick up? And then who becomes a late-round substitute to fit what I want to do? And all this, and again, using stuff like the draft tracker as well at Basketball Monster helps you significantly in this sort of stuff. But it's having an idea of what you want to do. Don't grab guys that are going to kill what you've set yourself up for early on. No matter if you're punting or if you're not punting, and your free throws are good, don't go and draft Dwight Howard at pick 80. Don't draft Mason Plumlee at pick 100 because it seems like good value, because he is going to murder your free throw percentage as well. Just really watch the way your team's set up. Don't reach on. Don't draft late round guys at their absolute ceiling. That's another thing that we talk about, getting value, which you get a lot of your value from those pick 60 to pick 100 onwards. So don't draft these guys at their absolute ceiling, because then you don't get any value.
Can I just say something on that? Because I know I understand and I'd give the same advice, but I'd also say I would rather draft Nikola Mirotic, as using him as an example. I know I love him.
And I knew you were going to use that as an example.
Who else can I say? Oh, here you go. CJ McCollum. I know you're not hiring him. I'd rather draft CJ McCollum at 80.
Yep.
And get break-even return on that, CJ McCollum becomes that 80 to 85 play for the season, then draft who's another three-point shooter later on,
Aaron
like Aflalo. A JJ Redick. Aaron, I'd rather say draft CJ McCollum at 80 and him return top 85 value than draft JJ Redick at pick 80 and him return top 120 value. I'd rather get him at his ceiling and making sure I'm still getting that value rather than losing value, if that makes sense.
But then if McCollum doesn't reach his ceiling, you've lost value as well. So you've got that risk too. Like he's not a guarantee to, like he's not a guarantee to be a top 80 guy.
No, he's not, but there's more chance, well, I think there's more chance that he becomes a top 80 player and makes that leap rather than JJ Redick makes that leap at age 34.
That comparing those two, that is absolutely true. But I think we've, you know, we talk about guys who had sneaky ends of last season. JJ Redick's end of last season was something ridiculous, wasn't it? He had some stupid, like, he was like top 30 for the last month of the season or something. Like, he's never going to do that again. But he was putting up some numbers where you just go, like, what is going on? Why is JJ Redick putting up these sort of numbers? I'm going to have to bring it up now. And this is just based on...
Jamal Crawford was injured. That was part of the reason.
All right, his last month, he was ranked 29th. His last 2 months, he was ranked 32nd. He averaged 20 points a game and three threes at 49 and 96 as his percentages. He's not going to do that again, but for 2 months he did it. And I know Jamal Crawford was injured. He played 34 minutes a night. Blake Griffin was injured as well. But it's not like that Redick is a complete stiff. But I understand your point. And there is, you can't take everything at 100%. You can't be like, oh, I say don't draft a guy at his ceiling. If you think that he's 95% chance going to get to that ceiling, then yeah, that's fine. But if he's a 10% chance to get to that ceiling, that's an all things break right, everything goes right sort of ceiling, then you don't draft him at that ceiling. But if you think that, yeah, look, this is as good as he's going to get and he is super likely to get to this good, then that's okay. That's the differentiation between it in my mind. Where else are we? Zach LaVine, Matt, has been named the starting shooting guard of the Minnesota Timberwolves, sending Kevin Martin to the bench. What do we think of LaVine? He was real good last season, but there were a couple of things that we need to pay attention to with him being really good last season, and it's the fact that they had nobody in their team. Kevin Garnett was out, Nikola Pekovic was out, Ricky Rubio was out, Kevin Martin was out for a lot of those stretches. So he was playing, for the last 2 weeks of the season, he played over 40 minutes a game. But in those times, he was putting up 21 points, 1.7 threes, 5.5 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal, you know, 45 and 88%. He was a top 20 player for those last couple of weeks. He was a top 40, a top 45 guy for the last month of the season. Now, Rubio's back. Kevin Martin's there. Wiggins is a year older. Karl Anthony Towns is there. Bjelica's there. There's more talent in Minnesota. What do we make of the ascension of Zach LaVine to the starting shooting guard job, remembering he played point guard for all of last season as well? What do we make of it? Where do we value him now? Where do you draft him? Is he a must-own in standard leagues now?
Well, this is a really tough one because we know he's the starting shooting guard, but we still don't know how many minutes.
That's true. He might be Johnny O'Brien.
He might be the token starter and play 20 minutes so Kevin Martin can play 34 minutes off the bench or whatever. So we don't know that. And everything you just said about Zach LaVine is right. I tweeted this out yesterday that he went from pretty much 25 minutes a game to bang to 40 minutes a game, and he was playing the point guard role. Now he's in the shooting guard role. How's that going to work out? I've picked him up in our listen leg. What is it? I think it's 156 players deep, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So for me, he's just inside that 150. But now for teams who have drafted, it depends who you're going to drop. And you tweeted out the question to a few of us the other day about whether it's Zach LaVine, Ben McLemore, Rodney Hood, or somebody else. KCP. For me, like Zach LaVine and Ben McLemore are doing different things. If I've got Ben McLemore, it's for his 3-pointers. If I'm getting Zach LaVine, it's for maybe 5 rebounds and 4 assists, like those 4 assists from a shooting guard position and the higher upside. So they're different things. So if you're drafting tomorrow, I would draft him. I'd bring him up inside that 150. Like I said, we're not sure how many minutes he's going to get, but we could be looking at, say, maybe 12 to 14 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and a 3 a game, like really, really roughly.
Yep.
He's not a great steals and blocks guy. His field goal percentage can hurt. He's not too bad from the free throw line.
He's a
line.
Good free throw shooter.
Very, very good at the end of the last season. So he's still that sort of maybe 130 to 150 range, late round flyer if you need a point guard, shooting guard eligible guy.
Yeah, I've got him at 121 in my 8-cat head-to-head ranks at the moment, and he sits right around those guys that I mentioned. That's why I mentioned them. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's at 118, Patrick Patterson's at 122, Ben McLemore's at 132, Rodney Hood's, I think, a little bit further down. I'm just going to have a look where Hood is at 161 at the moment. I've got him projected at 29 minutes, and all those numbers that you just brought up are pretty similar to the numbers I've got him at. I've got him at almost 13 points, at 3.5 rebounds, 4.2 assists, 0.8 steals. You know, those sort of decent numbers, which can be really valuable, especially he's going to handle the ball some. We saw him handling the ball a little bit today in their game, but that's because Tyus Jones was playing point guard. We didn't have Rubio out there, so LaVine probably won't handle it as much when Rubio's around. And just touching on the Timberwolves, what do you think of Andre Miller's hair? Have you seen it?
Was it cornrows?
Cornrows. Yep, cornrows. But he didn't even have the best hair in that game. Kyle Singler, he was rocking like a blonde emo, big sideswept fringe, shaved back and sides. It was magnificent.
Didn't see it, so I can't comment. Unfortunately, you have to tweet me a photo.
I have to find. I was going, who is this guy? I was looking and going, who is this European guy for the Thunder? Who is this guy that's come straight? You know who reminds me? I don't know if you watch Family Guy, Map, when they have the two European guys in the bar that are talking to each other with this odd accent and really broken English. It reminded me of one of those guys. Who is this guy straight out of a Serbian nightclub that's out here on the court? But it was Kyle Singler with his aggressive sideswept fringe.
A guy that Zach LaVine is really close to now is Alec Burks.
I think I've got him over Burks, to be honest. I'm just going to have a look.
Score, made 3-4 rebounds, 3-4 assists, a 3 game, hurts your field goal percentage. Like, they're going to be really close, I would think.
I've got him here. I've got 15 spots ahead, but at that point of the draft, 15 spots is like nothing. It's very, very small amount, but I think that in a 12-team league, you have to make sure that LaVine is owned. Again, it depends. You could have drafted a phenomenal team, and then maybe you don't want to add him. But I think that someone is going to want to add him in your league. What else are we going to look at here? Let's look at this. You still got time, Matty, to keep going? We've been going a while. You all right?
Let's go. I'm good.
All right. In a 10-team, 16-player keeper league, how many keepers per team makes it the most competitive, interesting each year? So he's asking how many keepers should they have? Should they have 1, 4, 5, 10? What's your thought?
Just in general, I'm in keeper leagues. I like sort of recycling players. For me, it's probably keeping maybe the top 2 or 3 rounds. So in this case, maybe the top 48 players, like the top 3 rounds. If you're in a dynasty league, that's when you're keeping all these guys. I sort of like the idea of having a keeper league, keeping 2, 3. Maybe 4 players at the maximum, and then when you are at the top of that draft board, you've still got some really good guys who you can draft. So, yeah, that's my opinion. What do you think?
I think that in keeper leagues, I'm a big advocate of having penalties. So keeping penalties. So you can do a dynasty league where you just keep everybody. That's fine. But I think that there should be a decision that comes into keeping it, whether it be auction price and auction inflation. Like, you keep this guy, but each year they get $5 added on to them. You can keep every player you pick as long as they're not a first rounder, but you have to then forfeit the next year's draft pick 1 round higher. And then if you keep them the next year, you have forfeit it 1 year higher, 1 round higher again. And until, you know, eventually they become a first round guy, then you have to drop them, which allows more intrigue between in the off season. Who do I drop? Who's everybody else going to drop? If I drop this guy, who is going to be available? It's not like a straightforward, like, if you have, I'm keeping the top 4 players. I know who your top 4 players are. I know who this guy's top 4 players are. But when you've got to factor in value into it, like, okay, who are my best 4 players? You might not keep your best 4 players. You might keep, you know, I was going to say Rudy Gobert, but he's probably one of your best 4 players. But Nikola Mirotic might not be one of your best 4 players, but you might have to sacrifice a 13th round pick for him. And then you keep him as a 13th round pick. Whereas if you're just keeping the top 4, it's not as much strategy, not as much sort of second guessing other owners. So I like to do it that way, with some sort of penalty that enables players to be recycled, but you don't necessarily know which ones they're going to be back out there. You might see players that, you know, Kevin Durant might have got picked for $100 in last year's auction, and someone doesn't want to keep him, so he might go back out there to free up $100 worth of cap space. And then it becomes a real interesting situation, is maybe Durant's going back out. Do I need to free up some money so I can bid on Durant? And just those sort of things is the way I like to approach a keeper league. What's your thoughts on my boy Joffrey Laverne? Is Nurkic really the first option at center? Can he overpass him? Well, let's start with Nurkic. Is he the first option at center, Matt?
All things being equal for me, he still is. He's had a delayed start to training camp. Whether that delays him going into the start of the season, which might open the starting role there for Joffrey Laverne. But all things being equal, in my opinion, Yusuf Nurkic is the starting centre for that team and still the better fantasy player.
Yep. So to me, that Nurkic is definitely the number one centre there. Laverne, now I don't recall where I saw this, but I saw something come out that if they're going to start someone over Yusuf Nurkic, it's probably going to be Nikola Jokic. Laverne is not really a center. He's more of a power forward, and he's more in line to get the backup minutes behind Fareed, maybe play a little bit of backup center. But Nikola Jokic is the guy that Mike Malone really, really likes. I like all of these guys. I like Laverne. I like Nurkic. I like Jokic as well. But I think that if anyone is going to play when Nurkic is out, I think Jokic is the guy that starts. Laverne's more the guy to get minutes as a backup power forward, minutes in place of Kenneth Fareed. And I'm not a big Kenneth Fareed fan, but I like Laverne, but it has to be pretty deep. I don't think I want him in any sort of, I don't want to touch him in any standard leagues at this point.
No, definitely not. No, he's Laverne at the moment, sort of your 16 team leaguers. Maybe two starting center positions, that sort of stuff.
Yep. Yeah, he's been really, really impressive in preseason. He's a guy that I was before last season. I started a dynasty league and I called my team the Joffrey Laverne All Stars before he'd even come over. I've been reading about him for a long time, but I just don't know how. I don't see him becoming standard relevant unless there's a few injuries that occur in the Denver front court. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is now out for the season. Unfortunately for Charlotte fans, for Michael Kidd-Gilchrist fans, but it opens up a position in the rotation for them. From all accounts, it's going to be PJ Hairston that takes the starting role, but we don't know. Again, is it a token starting role? Because they want to keep Jeremy Lamb and Jeremy Lin in their bench roles. Who gains the most, and what do you do with guys like Lamb, like Lin, like Hairston?
I don't think there's really one big winner. I think they're all going to split the minutes there. Nicholas Batum can slide over, play small forward as well, which opens up shooting guard for Lin and Lamb. For me, 10, 12 team leagues, I wouldn't roster any of them. 14 team leagues, it's getting close for Jeremy Lin and Jeremy Lamb. And as a comparison, I'd rather Zach LaVine over Jeremy Lamb.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Look, Lamb, I like Lamb. I thought he was not necessarily mistreated, but never given a real fair go in Oklahoma City. I think that you'd have to be in a 14-team league, 14-team league to look at Jeremy Lamb for this season. Hairston's probably going to start. I like Hairston. He's a bit of a bigger body guy than what Lamb is. Stronger guy, maybe more aggressive rebounder. But Jeremy Lin's the guy who gets the bigger bump. I think that Jeremy Lin becomes a guy you want to pick in a 12-team league, maybe with a last pick. I grabbed him off waivers in a 12-team league, but that's about it. No real winners, although now I was going to say someone takes up Kidd-Gilchrist's slack, but Kidd-Gilchrist provides nothing offensively. He was a decent rebounder. Maybe Nick Batum gets more rebounds now that he slides down to small forward, and Nick Batum is a guy who's rapidly rising up my ranks, and he's now a guy that if you can get him around pick 50, I think that's significant value for Batum. Anything else, Matt? I think we might be done.
Yeah, I want to ask you one more question.
Sure.
So,
unscripted.
I know you're not. Yes, this is a question without notice. I know you've been up and down on someone like Bradley Beal.
Yep.
Not completely convinced on CJ McCollum. Nikola Mirotic is still sitting on the fence a little bit. Who's the guy that's going to go from this top 60, in terms of ADP and draft position, the 60, this 80 guy, this 100 guy, who's going to jump up into the top 50? Who's the guy that you're going after that you want in majority of leagues, regardless of strategy? Who's going to break out?
I can't say Darren Williams is going to break out. I think he's going to bounce back, considering where you can get him at pick 80. I do like him at that spot. I think, I've got Nikola Mirotic ranked inside my top 50, so I'm relatively high on him now as well. Once I had, like, my only issue with him was minutes, but now I think even if he's at 30 minutes, his numbers are going to project pretty high. But Jonas Valanciunas is the guy that I think is going to become a top 40 sort of player. You can get him as late as 75 and 80 in some drafts I've seen, which is crazy. I've only got him ranked at 59 at the moment, but again, you're trying to be sort of relatively conservative. You don't want to be overly aggressive on all these players, but I think that he can become a top 40 player. I'm a massive fan of Valanciunas. I've been waiting for a breakout. I think it's coming this year, and I've got him at 59 based on 30 minutes. And now that's an increase on last season, but he could actually play 31. He could play 32. And I think that he's going to be the guy that is going to take a significant rise up the rankings.
Yeah.
Happy with that answer?
I like it. I've got five guys who you should be able to get between 50 to 100,
yep,
who I think will be top 50 players come the end of the season.
Go ahead.
Do you want them?
Yep, of course.
And this is in order of confidence. First one, Nikola Mirotic.
Yep.
Second one, Tyreek Evans.
Yep, absolutely.
Top 30 player at the end of last season. Limited Drew Holiday. Bang, he's going to be value. Bradley Beal, give him a full healthy season. No doubt in my mind, he's top 50. Jonas Valanciunas was in that list. And the other guy who I love, who's got the complete all-round fantasy game, just needs to stay healthy, is Terrence Jones.
Yeah, there's a lot of worries with him though, with the injuries. His game is very fantasy friendly, but there is a little bit of a worry. The other guys I'll throw in as I mentioned is Derek Favors is sliding a lot. I don't know why, but he's sliding outside the top 50, and that's silly. There's no reason for Derek Favors to slide outside the top 50. And Marcin Gortat slides as well. Like he was close to a top 20. I think he might have even been a top 20 guy post All-Star last season. You can get him in the 70s in leagues. Michael Carter-Williams showed in Milwaukee he wasn't a percentage killer. He still wasn't great, but he definitely didn't kill you in percentages. Maybe he gets it together with Jason Kidd. We saw what Jason Kidd did for that whole team last year. Maybe he, it pick 75 or pick 80, is a pretty decent value player as well. I think he's a real interesting player late in drafts too. And I think that's about my list of guys in that last. I want to touch on one quick guy, Andrew Wiggins. Where do you have him?
For me, he's outside the top 50. There's still some question marks around his fantasy games in terms of his efficiency, in terms of his steals, in terms of his assists. Massive scoring last season without, you know, Rubio and Kevin Martin. If they can stay healthy, now you throw in Karl Anthony Towns as well. So
Shabazz Muhammad's back.
Yeah. Shabazz Muhammad is back. How good did he look today?
Oh, wow. Towns look good as well. Yeah. Jesus, their team is, for a shit team, their team is stacked. There's so many guys that I like on that team. Like, I really like Tyus Jones. Like, he's not going to do anything this year, but I really like him. Rubio, LaVine, Kevin Martin, Wiggins, Muhammad, Bielitsa, Towns, Jeng. There's so many guys on this team that are exciting players. I'm going to watch a lot of Minnesota games this season because they're going to be fun, and I just want to see how these young guys develop. And then Tayshaun Prince is there as well.
Yeah, if you're looking for an efficient big man who can rebound and block some shots outside the top 50 and you miss out on Valanciunas or Gortat, Gorgui Dieng, just do it, lock it in.
Yep, Gorgui Dieng is going to be a signature. He's another guy that I should have mentioned that you could get outside the top 50 or top 80 or whatever. That's going to be a significant riser, I think, this season. He is going to play 30 minutes. I'm pretty confident.
Do you want to hear my bold prediction for the season?
Go on.
Just based on one preseason game.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook to average double-digit assists this season.
Yeah, the team's a little scary. What do you make of Stephen Adams starting over Enes Kanter?
I actually don't mind it. I don't, because they got so many offensive options. It's not funny. They've got more scoring options than you do fantasy leagues. Like.
Yeah, that's true.
Durant, Westbrook, like Waiters, Morrow at the 2 and 3, Kanter, Ibaka can stretch the floor. So I don't mind them going with Stephen Adams starting him, bringing Kanter off the bench with a Waiters or a Morrow. They've got DJ Augustine as well. Yeah. Like, they're too deep.
Campaign is a really good scorer as well.
Campaign's meant to be one of the better long term point guard prospects from the draft. They are going to be a scary, scary team this season. I tweeted today, no one's going to keep them under 100 points all year.
Well, what they've got, they've got the potentially the best offensive player in the game in Kevin Durant. They've got the best scoring, or the NBA's leading scorer from last season, the best offensive point guard in the game in Russell Westbrook. And they've got arguably a top five offensive only center in Enes Kanter. Like, I know we know his deficiencies, but offensively, how many guys are better than him? There's not many. His offensive game is very well refined. He's shit house on defense. We know that. But offensively, their team looks frightening. There's just so many guys.
Now you can stick Serge Ibaka in the corner and you still have to respect him.
Oh, exactly. And Ibaka can do so many things as well. Like, there's so many. Kanter and Ibaka both are 80% free throw shooters as well. So there's no issues with any of that. They can both hit threes. They can both step out. They can move in and out. Yeah. Kanter's one of the best offensive rebounders in the game. Yeah, for putbacks and follows and all that sort of stuff. He can take two guys on him down in the post. And then if you're going to send two guys to try and stop Kanter in the post, yeah, good luck. Because then you've got Durant and then you've got Westbrook who you might have to leave alone. And if you double one of those guys, then it's just guys everywhere on this team. It is going to be frightening to watch them play.
Anthony Morrow, like I said,
he's like a 48% three-point shooter.
Yeah. And best
Cole
thing is now
like that as well.
Now the best thing is they've got a decent coach who's going to draw up plays for them.
I can't wait to see what the Thunder do this season. You'll have your Westbrook jersey on all year, I'm sure.
Yes.
All right, Matt, we're done for today. Quick reminder again, allstar5.com. It has now officially launched, so go ahead and check out All-Star 5 if you are interested there. Basketball Monster, of course, and Hardwood Paroxysm is where you can find my stuff. Matt, anything you want to give a plug to? Your Twitter account? What else have you got coming out? Anything coming out soon? Your positional tiers are all done?
My positional tiers are all done. I think I did 180 players. There's over 10,000 words, so they're at #basketball.com if you want to check them out. You can follow me on Twitter at SmanSports for all your fantasy basketball needs. And at this stage, no articles. I'm just taking a little bit of a break before the season starts, but a couple more drafts to go, some podcasting with Josh, and less than 3 weeks until the season, so bring it on.
Yep. Now, for me, upcoming podcast, there's the Red Rock Roto League live draft will be happening this weekend, Saturday night, US time, Sunday morning, Australian time. So check that out. If you're in the league, if you're not in the league, you want to see a 16-team Roto League go down live as it happens, check that out or listen to it later. Going to have some good articles coming out on Basketball Monster. Going to be looking at the ADPs and pre-ranks on ESPN and Yahoo. Going to be looking at per 36-minute value players, so players to keep an eye on and keep tabs on when injuries occur, who are the best per position producers. Don't know exactly how I'm going to tackle that article, but we're going to do that. There's going to be a ton of content coming there. Plus, we're going to be doing a Fantasy Basketballs for Beginners podcast, Matt, you and me, really digging into things at the basics. So if you're sort of new to fantasy basketball, that's something new for you. I'm going to be doing an interesting podcast next week, if everything goes well. I'm going to be doing a podcast with a fantasy basketball fan, I think is the best way of putting it. Someone who plays in a lot of leagues but isn't necessarily in the industry working in it. Australian cricketer Trent Copeland is going to be coming on the podcast. Ooh. And we're going to be having a chat about fantasy basketball and his interest in the game and his sporting career. So we're going to be doing that next week. So that's an interesting podcast to check out next week as well. So follow Matt at SmanSports. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. And subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and please leave me a review. Thank you to everybody who's done that. There's been some great ones. I gave a call out the other day for someone to give a just give a review and just don't write anything. Just write good and great. And someone did that and I loved it. Title of the review was great and the comment underneath it was good. And that's all I want. 5 stars, good, great. You can put more than that, but whatever. Just get something out there. And if I just see a whole string of good and greats, I'll be really happy. So go ahead onto iTunes and subscribe and leave reviews. And you know that we're going to be here all through the preseason and all through the regular season doing this podcast to help you win your season-long leagues and to help you win daily fantasy as well. Matt, thank you again for coming on.
Thanks, Josh, and thanks for listening, fantasy fans.
No problem. And make sure you let us know what you thought about the debate. Not necessarily who won, but just tell us what side you're on and if any arguments that we had swayed you in either direction. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.